WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Margo Adler. Playwright and actor Pamela Geen grew up in South Africa during apartheid and during the turbulent years before the end of white South African rule. She has written a powerful play called The Syringa Tree, which tells the story of a white family and a black family whose emotional lives are intertwined. Much of the story is told in the voice of a young girl, Elizabeth, based in large part on Pamela Geen's own childhood. Geen plays 26 different characters in The Syringa Tree, young and old, black and white. A film version of the play will air on the Trio cable channel on May 6th. The idea for The Syringa Tree arose unexpectedly during an acting class taught by Larry Moss in L.A. In the class, Geen was given an exercise. Turn to the person next to you and tell them a story. Don't censor yourself. Suddenly, a memory, long repressed, rose up unbidden. Geen started talking about a formative event, a terrible night in 1967 that became the seed for The Syringa Tree.
It took place on the farm of my grandparents, which was up in the northern Transvaal, and it was an attack on the farm. It was something that was so unprecedented at that time, and sadly something that has become, you know, an everyday occurrence now in Zimbabwe and other places in South Africa. But we believe that it was what they refer to as a terrorist who came across the border from Rhodesia, then called Rhodesia, at nighttime and just walked into the farmhouse and attacked my grandparents. My grandfather was 82 years old at the time and really an extraordinary man. I think in retrospect now as an adult, I look back and see that he was a tremendous humanitarian and a very kind person who, despite the laws of the time, allowed black families to live on his farm. And, you know, the memories I have of that place were so idyllic that I think when this happened, it was such an extraordinary shock and certainly such a devastating thing for my mother. It was my mother's father that we moved on. We did not speak about it. The farm was called Clover, and Clover was lost to us forever. We never went back there and just basically got on with our lives.
And you hid this event sort of was sort of hidden in your own being, I guess. And then you then began to write, you then began to develop the play over 4 years, as I understand it. And you have 28 characters, 24 characters. How many characters are there? And you play them all. And who are these characters?
Well, there are, I think, 26 characters now. There were 28, and we cut some, and we added one or two, and we took them away again. But somebody said a wonderful thing to me, which was, when you watch the performance of The Syringa Tree, it's like watching somebody channel different people onto the stage or into the world, and it's almost as though you see all those different characters. And what I love about that is the idea that so many characters can live in one body. And really, in a sense, that's the message of the play, the message of tolerance and truth and, you know, how we relate to one another, and that good and evil live in our hearts and not in the color of our skin. So if all those characters can exist and come out of one body, it's a lovely idea in the end. So I'm very glad we stuck to it and we accomplished it.
When you, as Larry told it, when you morph, when you change into these characters and you go from one to another, I think it's going to be hard for people who haven't seen The Syringa Tree to sort of understand what that's actually like. Can you sort of explain what you do?
Sure. Well, I think at the beginning, you know, when we first started it, it was very, very sort of basic and, you know, going from one side to the other as you would if you were sort of standing pretending to be two different people. But I also worked with Jean-Louis Rodrigue, who was an Alexander teacher, and he and Larry worked tirelessly with me to accomplish this. And really what it is that you don't have to wait for a break between the two lines. You don't have to make a break between the two lines of two different characters speaking to one another in a conversation. You can actually use the tailing out energy of the one into the energy of the next.
So give me one example.
One example, gosh, out of the whole play, now what could I choose, Margot? golly, well, I could take it right from the beginning where little Elizabeth is playing up in the tree and she comes down and at this point the audience has only seen her alone on the stage, and then she turns around to the back of the stage, and as she comes around, she's suddenly Salamina. So it's an interesting thing. There's a lot demanded of the audience in this, but I think they get it very, very quickly, and then it's part of the game of the play is, you know, being with each different character so quickly. And this is how it happens in the play.
You be quiet, eh? If you wake her up, the master, he's going to give you a big, big hiding. Come, help me to iron.
But Concha Hingham, BMC Salamina, I've got my baby on my back.
Oh, very good, Miss Lizzie. Very, very good.
Dun-dun-dun. See what I learned in my school today. Scottish dancing.
Yo, Lizzie. You are jumping like a monkey.
I know. I'm hyperactive. I've had too much sugar. Buddisha, buddisha. I'm the ching-ching-ching-ching. Buddisha, buddisha. I'm the ching-ching-ching-ching-ching. That's a ballet. Luska showed me next door. We can do the twist. And we don't even get dizzy of it. You can't do that.
Sure. Not with my big stomach, Miss Lizzie.
When is your baby going to be born, Salamina?
Very soon. The master, he say, the baby, it's coming very, very soon.
I will say hello to the baby. I'll say to him, Dumela, Dumela.
Watching you play this role and listening to the dialogue, What I felt, particularly when watching the girl, the 6-year-old girl or 10-year-old girl or whatever, as she's in her swing, as she's talking, I felt amorphous fear. You know, there was a lot of fear that she expressed, fears that laws will be broken, fears that people will be taken away. Did you feel that fear growing up in South Africa? Was it palpable at the time?
I did, and I think as a child, you know, when you're surrounded by something, you don't realize that that's not the norm. You make it the norm for yourself. So I think it's only in retrospect that I realize how frightened I actually was as a child. And I'm often asked how close I am to little Elizabeth in the play. And people say to me, were you really like that as a child? And obviously I have no objective memory of what I was like as a child. I think the whole thrust of Elizabeth is about trying to take care of everybody, trying to make sure that everything is all right at every single minute, so there is no moment for her to rest. She's in charge of keeping everybody safe in her own mind, so that keeps her busy, busy, busy. And one of the things I was going to say about that is that I don't really have any objective idea of how I was, but I certainly remember how I felt, how I experienced things around me. And I think part of what contributes to that as a child is that we don't have a way to analyze or understand the events happening around us. We just experience them. We really just take them in, right into our heart, and react to them and witness what we see.
Now, your father, was he a doctor just as the father in the play is a doctor?
Yes, he was. And
was he Jewish?
My father's family were Jewish. His father was Jewish, but he married a non-Jew. So my dad was not a religious Jew, but
he's portrayed in the play as what I would call as an English Jewish progressive doctor.
And that's correct.
It made me think about the whole history of English progressive South Africans. Nadine Gordimer, but
Gordimer,
I'm also thinking
right.
of that incredible movie about the death of Ruth First, who was married to Joe Slovo, who was a Communist Party official in South Africa. And it was told from the point of view of the daughter, of a little girl. And what I remember in that movie, and what I also remember in, and what I think about when I think about the Syringa Tree and about that that little 6-year-old, 10-year-old, whatever, girl dancing was that sense of being in an alternative world, of not being a part of the mainstream reality that is in the country and the world that you're living in, right. Of feeling alienated in some sense from the society that you right. are growing up in. Did you feel that in some sense you were, as the slogan goes, a stranger in a strange land?
You know, I think we did in a sense, but I would also say that, you know, my family was not, my family did not feel called to be revolutionaries or working in that extreme way that they were in that film. I think they were much more just regular people trying to make sense of their lives. And one thing I think that was unusual about my family was that my father, being a doctor, he had access to a wide cross-section of the population. So he would see from the poorest black person at his consulting rooms to, you know, a white policeman who would tell stories of things that were going on in the townships that were not common knowledge or were certainly not in the daily newspapers because of the censorship of the media at the time. And then he would see boys who had come back from the border fighting in Angola. And you know, young boys sent off to defend apartheid, basically. So we would hear the stories of that at the dinner table at night, and I would see the effect that that would have on my father. And I think where he wasn't a person who went out, you know, as a revolutionary per se, and he was not somebody followed around by the secret police, I certainly did have a feeling as a child of nervousness about what was going on, and particularly some of the smaller events, like, you know, somebody phoning the police because he was seeing a black child in the white section of the consulting room. So somebody would get upset about that. And I had this fear as a child that my father would be in some sort of trouble, that some trouble was imminent. But I think a lot of that had also to do with what was going on around us politically in the country. And it was a pervasive feeling that everything was not all right, and that there was this separation, a sort of divide between the Afrikaans and the English-speaking people. But then saying that as well, I would say that there's a strange kind of intimacy in South Africa also between all of the people there, that we were designated by law to be separate from the blacks. And yet we had this intimate, close connection with them, living in our homes, taking care of us as children, really almost part of the family. And I've had so many letters from people telling me about the woman who cared for them when they were a child, and the, you know, the crossover between the different groups there.
My guest is Pamela Geen, author of The Syringa Tree, a play that is inspired by her childhood in South Africa. Geen plays all the parts in the play, from herself as a 6-year-old child to a black woman in her 80s. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Pamela Geen, author of The Syringa Tree, a play that's inspired by her childhood in South Africa. What is the symbolism of the syringa tree?
Oh, the syringa tree
well,
is...
Well, what kind of a tree is it, first of all?
You know, Marg, I'm always asked this question, and I keep thinking I have to go to that book and look it all up and be absolutely clear. But, you know, really, I wrote it from the love I had for the syringa tree that grew in our backyard. It was an enormous tree. It's part of the lilac family. And I think it's very different than the lilac trees that we have in America, certainly, and certainly in England. The flowers are not the sort of bushy, purpley flowers that we see here on the lilac bushes and the trees, but really more like a very delicate little flower that's in a starburst cluster. And then they have green berries that turn golden. So to me, it was a magical tree always, with the golden berries, and the flowers are so fragrant. Once you've smelled that, you never forget it. So I think as a child had that as a place of refuge. And in the play, I use it as a refuge for the black people trying to hide from the police, and also a sort of a spiritual place. I think the tree, I mean, in African mythology, one of the things that I loved so much was the story of how the spirits, when they die, pass into the leaves and the trees and the berries so that they're with us always and around us. To me, it just seemed an appropriate and really magical place. And then a special place for Elizabeth to hide, to go and think. And one of the lovely things my dad said to me after he'd read the play was, he said, "I didn't realize that little girl up in the tree saw so much." And I loved that so much because it was really the spirit of the play in a sense.
The characters in The Syringa Tree include, of course, Elizabeth, the little girl, Salamina, mm-hmm. the girl's nanny, who cries and bellows and has this deep, deep voice full of of pain and wisdom. Elizabeth's parents, we talked about the sort of overworked doctor, and Elizabeth's mother, who I gather is sort of a woman who stays at home, a South African woman. And of course, yes. there are also some very racist Afrikaner neighbors who are very complicated. And then there is the tiny daughter of Salamina, Moliseng, who in some sense is the heart of the play, isn't it?
Yes, she is. And the lovely gift to me of The Syringa Tree was that I thought when I began to write it that it was a story about my life and about me, but it really isn't. It's a story about the children of South Africa and what they went through and what they gave to have the very basic thing that we pretty much take for granted, and that is freedom and human dignity. So once I understood that, and really it came from a profound lesson that Larry would teach me as we went along in the development of the play, and I would be so frightened to perform it. Obviously, I'm standing there by myself performing 28 characters, and I would be so nervous, and he would say to me, "It isn't about you." And I would say, "What do you mean it isn't about me?" And he'd say, "It's not about you. It's about being in service of something greater, something more important than any of us individually, and that is the idea of freedom." So little Moliseng in the play carries that message, I think. And Jason Alexander actually came to see a workshop, and he said, "You know, I love that little Moliseng. I want to hear more of her. I want to see her more." And I said, "Oh no, she's hidden. That's why she's hidden. That's why she doesn't speak, because she's illegally on that property, and that was her experience, and that was her life." And he said to me, no, "I really want to hear more." And Larry pushed me and championed me into that idea and said to me, "You have to write the thing that you're most frightened of." And I said to him, "You know, I don't feel that I have a right to speak for her. I'm not black. I'm not a child in that time growing up in her shoes. So I have no idea, and I don't feel that I can write for her." And he said to me, "If you don't speak for her and for those children who lost their lives, who will?" And once I understood that, I think I really learned a lesson as an artist that we're here to channel things into the world, to bring ideas and whatever that mysterious process is, to be of service to something greater. So Moliseng really is that for me.
Is her death in the play supposed to be the Soweto uprising of 1976?
Yes. Yes, it is. And I was a student at university at that time, and I remember this idyllic world, so-called idyllic world that we lived in, where you knew that things were wrong going on around you. You didn't feel that, you know, and I really should only speak for myself, but I certainly didn't feel that I could personally change anything other than by my own personal behavior in the world. You know, they had such military strength, and it was almost like, I think of it now almost like being, you know, when the Berlin Wall came down, that no one could believe that it actually came down. It had been there forever and ever and ever, and it seemed that it would be there forever and ever. But it came down, and this miracle happened. So at that time, when the riots began, I remember being at university, and I remember the chaos going on around me and people running from place to place and saying they're rioting in the township, and the children are burning everything. And that feeling in the pit of your stomach that you knew it would come, and now it was there. I will never, ever forget that. So I try to write my idea of what they went through. And there was a child called Moliseng born at my house, and we did hide her away. And then, of course, she went off to school. And part of what I wrote as the Molly sang in the play, was what I was always haunted by with regard to that child. I always thought, well, here we were growing up in the same house, sharing the same things, playing together, and then she went off into her life with her black skin and I stayed in mine with my white skin. And what happened to her? Where did she go? What happened to her? So I really wrote my deepest fear in the play.
My guest is Pamela Geen, the author of The Syringa Tree, a play inspired by her South African childhood. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our conversation with South African playwright and actor Pamela Geen about her play, The Syringa Tree. What was it like, Pamela, when apartheid ended for you?
Well, I think a huge sense of relief that it was over and that somehow now there might be a chance to grow South Africa into an extraordinary place. I always think of, you know, the joy I felt in coming to America, the great pride I have in feeling that I can live in a place where there's opportunity for everybody. And I remember thinking, well, now that can happen at home. Now that can be, you know, what we can work for and what we can create there.
But you didn't move back.
No, I have not moved back.
Why? And you moved to America.
Well, I moved to America, in 1980. So I've really made a new life for myself. It's been, you know, part of my journey, and I'm immensely grateful to live here. But in another way, I think of South Africa as my home, and when I speak of home, that's really what I mean. It's just been, you know, a place that I've carried with me, and I think that's why Syringa Tree came to me when it did.
But it healed the broken heart. You wrote somewhere that you had a mm-hmm. broken heart about the place you grew up in when you came at 26 to live in America.
Yes, I did. I think I had a broken heart and didn't know that I had a broken heart until I began to write the play. I would always try to avoid conversations about South Africa and, you know, when people would ask me this or would ask me that, I would try to change the subject and or just try to get away from the conversation altogether. And I had such a feeling of discomfort and dis-ease. And I think the reason for that was I didn't know how to rationalize or make sense of it, and really I didn't know what I felt, because I'd put what I felt so far away in the back of my heart and my mind and try to run away from it. And I think I did that because it was painful to me. I didn't realize at the time that's what I was doing. I mean, I would never say that I was there's so many people who are exiles from South Africa who left, you know, because they had done extraordinary work there and were followed around by the secret police and thrown out and deported. And, you know, I would never say that I came even close to any one of those people who I consider to be great heroes, and many of them the unsung heroes of South Africa, some in my own family. But for me, I don't know if it's my own psychological makeup or what it was. I really tried to hide it away. I tried to get as far away from it as I possibly could, and I felt profoundly ashamed of that. When I started to write the play, I realized it wasn't anger, it wasn't hatred, it was a deep, deep well of grief and love and joy that I felt that I was unable to articulate.
When did you last go back to South Africa?
I was there, I think, 8 years ago. And I'm looking forward to going back. We're invited to take the Syringa Tree to the Baxter Theatre in Cape Town. I also want to go back to Clover. I want to go, this is a very personal, I've never really spoken about it before, but I know there's nothing left there, but I'd like to go back and see it.
Is the land still possessed by your family?
No. I think it was sold pretty much after that event, a long time ago, but I'd like to just go back there, really, I suppose, for the feeling of the place and the smell of the dust and the earth and, you know, just to go back and remember those early feelings.
Now, have you contacted or been in contact with the people who cared for you when you were in South Africa?
Yes, I have. And one of the lovely things that happened was we had been looking for them for quite a while. In fact, since I started writing the play, I'd asked my husband's brother, who's fairly involved in certain communities in South Africa, and he was looking, and I asked my dad, and he was looking, and I think right as I was finishing in New York, I got an email from my father to say some of the people that I was looking for were alive, and that he had found them, and that I could phone them. And I was absolutely, just overwhelmed with...
Did you?
Yes, I did. And I've had several extraordinary conversations. You know, and it's so funny when you drop into somebody's life like that and you've been away from them for a very long time, you have no idea where they're at and whether they would welcome you sort of imposing upon them. But I have to say the feeling that I had when I phoned was one of such tremendous joy and kindness and a welcome that I could never have imagined, really. And one of them said to me, "Oh, Pemi, I wish I had wings to fly to you." So that was that's going to be, I think, a great part of going home is going to be those reconnections and just the time and being able to spend the time again. Now as an adult to get to know and to look again and feel again.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Margot. I had a lovely time. Thank you.
Playwright Pamela Geen. Her play The Syringa Tree is running off-Broadway at Playhouse 91. A film version will air on the Trio cable channel on May 6th.